And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, bringing you the sources you don't ordinarily get to hear in the corporate media. And we're very excited today because we should have on the line with us Maria Paez-Victor, and she is a member of the Louis Riel Bolivarian Circle, Hands Off Venezuela, I believe that's Toronto area. She's also the political director of the National Council of Latin and Caribbean Women in Canada. So, Maria, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for calling me.
Oh, it's great. You obviously are involved in a number of things, and we're going to talk about one of those issues. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself for the listeners just before we go ahead?
Well, I'm a sociologist, retired from teaching now. I was born in Venezuela, and I've lived in Canada almost all of my adult life. I've been here 35 years, but I have always kept in contact with Latin America. And I visited Venezuela many, many times, several times a year sometimes. So I have kept in touch with developments there. I've often been asked about Venezuela, and I like to share my knowledge of Venezuela and Latin America whenever I can.
Yeah, it sounds like you know what's going on there as well as what's going on here. And I guess it's both what we're talking about today.
Yes.
Yeah, because I understand you were giving some testimony before the Foreign Affairs Subcommittee here, and they were discussing Venezuela within our own government, and they were discussing several issues, and I guess they were hearing about Venezuela, and then you were also able to speak to them, I believe. So,
yes.
Yeah, okay, good. That's good. Can you tell us what it was they were saying and what they were having a discussion about?
Well, there's a subcommittee that is studying international human rights. Now that in itself is a bit problematic, because the three countries that they are studying are Iran, Burma, and Venezuela, which is quite extraordinary to place Venezuela, the most democratic country in South America, with Iran and Burma. So there is an agenda behind this. It is very hard for any country to try and accurately study the human rights in any other country, because the statistics aren't always available or comparable, and because people come there with anecdotal information, and that is unrepresentative. Apart from that, I ask you, what would the people of Canada and the government of Canada think if the Parliament of Venezuela struck a subcommittee to study the human rights in Canada?
Well, I mean, there's a lot we could talk about in terms of human rights in Canada. We could talk about the crackdown on women's rights that the Conservative government is engaged in.
But when we suggested at the parliamentary committee that Canada could also be examined, they took quite exception and said, what? Human rights in Canada? You know, they thought that it was all right. But nevertheless, the point with respect to looking at what is happening in Venezuela is very difficult, because the media in Venezuela is controlled by actually active opponents of the elected government. They are owned by people who are not democratic. The owners of the media in Venezuela were in the overthrow of the illegitimate elected government of Venezuela. So what happens is that these media conglomerates in Venezuela are very linked to the international media, because all throughout these years they've had all kinds of contacts with them. And what they do is that they are the ones that supply the rest of the world the misinformation over Venezuela. And this has happened that even in Canada, the media here are dependent on the information they get from these conglomerates. There is not one Canadian newspaper or Canadian TV or radio that has a genuine Canadian representative that is located in Latin America, you know, permanently, you know, their person down there. Most of what we get here, 100 almost, I would say 99%, is filtered through these international media conglomerates, who are in turn fed by these media oligarchies that there are in Venezuela. So, for example, the Toronto Star 2 years ago, was disciplined by the Ontario Press Council because we put in a demand against the Toronto Star to the Ontario Press Council because they published 4 articles completely erroneous and biased against Venezuela, and we won the case. And so the Toronto Star was disciplined because those articles were significantly deficient in terms of the standards of good journalism. Now, what happened was that their journalist went to Venezuela and only spoke to the opposition. So these are the kind of things that happen, and we were very worried that the Parliament of Canada would fall prey to these media distortions. And that's why we came forward to the Parliament and said, hold on a minute, we would like to give you first-hand experience and data, hard data, on what is happening in Venezuela.
Well, how do you get the opportunity to do that? I understand there was a committee discussion on this, and I guess they're addressing certain issues. Were they inviting you? How did you get to have your voice heard?
The parliamentary committee, I think it was one of the members of the committee, contacted our partner in Quebec, which is the Société Bolivarienne Hands Off Venezuela. And they contacted us because we are, you know, united. We are partners. So we have Bolivarian Circle Louis Riel here in Toronto and the Société Bolivarienne in Montreal, and we're all connected to Hands Off Venezuela. And they said, would you like to present, come before this committee? And we jumped at the chance. So we arrived there, and we gave a presentation, half in French, half in English. And I think that, in all honesty, I think they were quite surprised at our presentation. But their surprise is not comparable to our surprise, because you can tell by the kind of questions that people ask you whether they know something about the subject. And we were quite frankly appalled that the members of that committee, most of them anyway, had very little knowledge of Latin America or Venezuela specifically.
Absolutely. I mean, when, as you said, there seems to be a very narrow source of news in terms of Venezuela. You might have an Associated Press, Newswire, and a few other wires, and the opposition press in Venezuela being transmitted directly to us here. And you start having people, and you want to talk about Venezuela, and you start hearing President Bush's or then the U.S. State Department's later allegations about terrorism or nuclear weapons development. I mean, whatever you can come up with, it's getting quite ridiculous.
The latest one is that they're going around teaching the indigenous people Arabic.
Yes,
so they can be turned into Taliban.
It's a big threat to hemispheric
so
security.
It's ridiculous. How can anyone even publish such a thing?
But I can tell, I was in Venezuela in 2006, mm-hmm. and it was during the World Social Forum, and I came from the airport, went into Caracas, and was able to see many, many newsstands. And in terms of the newspapers, there was quite a variety of coverage about opinions. It was a very politically charged time when I was there, as it is always. And I saw a lot of opposition newspapers, and I mean, some of them, they were making statements about things they disliked about his programs. Others were comparing him to animals or making racist statements, and it seems there's an anything goes kind of mentality.
Exactly. You know, every time I have gone to Venezuela, especially with Spanish speaking people, they are absolutely dumbstruck when they see the vitriolic criticism of the government in the newspapers and the TV and the radio, and there's freedom of speech. They can say all of these things, and the government of Venezuela has not closed one TV station, one newspaper, has not censored them in any way. What it has done is, you want freedom of expression? Well, let's really have it. And they have allowed the expansion of community radio and TV. They have expanded access to this. So instead of censoring or closing the media, they've amplified it. And so today there are numerous community and radio and TV in places that you never would have dreamed that this could have happened, because there they are in the slum areas, in the rural towns where there was nothing, in indigenous villages, and I can't tell you how creative these community radios are. People are doing programs about the things that really are important to them, really local and national, and sometimes even international things, but things that are important to them, not news or programs that are given to them, but that they themselves are making it. So the private media is still strong. It's still 95% of the TV and radio is owned in private hands. But, for example, there are about 600 privately owned radio stations, but there are about 250 community stations now, and only 79, that's 80 of them, are state-owned. There are 65 TV stations that are private and 37 that are community stations, but only six that are owned by the state. So these community radios and TVs are not state-owned. The state has nothing to do with them, you know? These people are free to say whatever they like. The only TV station that was closed was the state TV station during the coup d'etat in 2002. It was ransacked. It was vandalized. There was not one international human rights or journalistic organization that cared.
Yes.
Journalists that work for the government are continuously, every month, they are harassed, they are hurt, they are shot at, and you don't hear anything of this.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a lot to say to this Foreign Affairs Subcommittee, I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of the issues and the events. I'm just curious, who was on this committee? Who did you get to talk to when you were speaking in front of this?
There were two members from the Conservative Party, two members from the Liberal Party, a member from the Bloc Québécois, and a member from the NDP. I won't be a surprise to you that the NDP and the Bloc were the most attentive and the most favorable to us. The ones who were worse to us were the Liberals, unfortunately, because they are the ones who have initiated the free trade agreement with Colombia. And it is in the interest of both the Conservatives and the Liberals to be able to say, at the end of the day, oh, no, don't worry about the violations for human rights that occur in Colombia, because they're just as bad or worse in Venezuela, which is, of course, a tremendous lie, a tremendous injustice to Venezuela, a tremendous injustice to the people of Colombia who are suffering desperately under a government that has, you know, that is waging a civil war there. And, you know, we were quite appalled that a member of parliament, not of this committee, but it was Scott Bryson, who said to the press a few days before we presented that President Chavez is a brutal dictator. Now, Latin Americans hearing this would consider this profound ignorance of Latin American history and of Venezuela in particular, because, you know, Latin Americans are very well acquainted with brutal dictators. People who have waged war against other countries, who have made people disappear, who have displaced indigenous people, who had secret police tortured, imprisoned, killed at will. Well, none of these things are happening under President Chavez in Venezuela. This is the first time in 40 years Venezuela doesn't have a secret police. Venezuela is not a dictatorship. And anyone who says that Chavez is a dictator is calling the President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, a liar and a scoundrel, because President Jimmy Carter and his Carter Center have been down in Venezuela for, there have been 14 elections of different levels in the last 11 years. They've been there for the major elections, and they have been witness that these are efficient, transparent, honest elections. So if there is a dictatorship in Venezuela, then they are either wrong, these Carter Center, or they're colluded. And I ask you, what kind of dictator loses an important referendum by 1%? Because he lost the referendum in 2006 and by 1%, and he recognized it immediately.
Yes.
It is really quite terrible for people to think this. The other thing I did at that parliament committee, as I showed them these little bags that are empty bags, and these little plastic empty bags, it used to be filled with sugar and flour and beans, and they have stamped on them not the face of President Chavez, not the name of his party or anything, but articles of the Constitution relating to people's human rights. This is part of an education campaign going on in Venezuela all these last years so that people know what their rights are and demand them of the government. And I asked the committee what brutal dictator does such a thing.
Yes, it sounds like this committee should have heard a lot more of you. Maybe there'll be other opportunities. For our listeners, if they want to learn more information, is there sources you like to turn to when you're getting news about Venezuela?
Well, unfortunately, there aren't that many in English, but there is now a very good newspaper called Correo del Orinoco. If they write to our circle, we can give them the email address of the Correo del Orinoco, and also there is VenezuelaAnalysis.com. VenezuelaAnalysis.com has articles in English about Venezuela, and there are several other web pages that have sometimes articles on Venezuela. But they can contact us at CB, as in baby, L, as in Lewis, Riel, R-I-E-L, at simpatico.ca. So it's C-B-L, Riel, R-I-E-L, at simpatico.ca, and we can send them the websites of these other websites where they can get information about Venezuela.
Well, that sounds great. Oh, Maria, thanks so much for being on our program.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling me.
We'll remind our listeners when we're covering more Venezuela things. So thanks very much, and talk to you later.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.